Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we have an interview with A.G. Burnett, the chairman of the Nevada Gaming Control Board, on the multiple issues he's had to face during his term. The GGB Podcast is brought to you by iGamingPlayer.com, the leading affiliate marketing service for land-based and online casinos in North America.
When I touched her skin, my fingers ran with blood.
As a longtime employee and later a member of the Nevada Gaming Control Board, A.G. Burnett was appointed chairman by Governor Brian Sandoval in 2012. An attorney with expertise in corporate securities, Burnett has been instrumental in some of the recent developments in the Nevada regulatory landscape, including skill games, esports, and the expansion of sports betting. Burnett recently spearheaded an innovation beta program where he encourages the development of technology in Nevada casinos. He spoke with me at the offices of the Gaming Control Board in Las Vegas in May.
A.G. Burnett, thanks for joining us on the GGB Podcast. It's good to finally sit down with you. I've been a fan of yours since you came on, and I was going through some of the things that you've had to oversee during your tenure here, and it's pretty daunting. You were here for the introduction of iGaming, the initial wagering on esports just recently, the definition and introduction of skill games, and the expansion of sports betting, and dozens of other things. So does it seem like it's always just been one thing after another?
Absolutely. I mean, thank you for saying that. That's very nice of you. But I do have to give credit to the staff here at the Gaming Control Board, first and foremost. I've been here for 19 years. And as luck would have it, or chance would have it, or skill, one of those, right. I think today, actually, in 1998 I started.
No kidding.
And I would not have been here this long had it not been for the great people here.
Right.
Roger, we've got 400 people right now. You and I are sitting in our Las Vegas offices. Mm-hmm. The bulk of our staff is in Carson City, the state's capital, mm-hmm. but obviously we have a lot of people here, and it's just been an incredible working environment to work with some of the greatest people I've ever been able to work with. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It's been one thing after another continuously, but that's gaming.
Sure. It really has been here in Nevada, but it really just has seemed to accelerate. So let's break down the events one by one. When you took over, there had already been extensive hearings on iGaming. Mark Lipparelli, I think, was the chairman during the hearing phases of that, and some of the decisions had been made. But what were some of your first concerns here in Nevada when iPoker was launched?
When iPoker was first being launched, I was on the Gaming Control Board, and I knew that it was going to be a big event. I knew that it was going to be something that we had to look at strongly as regulators. And I think we all collectively had a feeling at the time that it might be a game changer for the state of Nevada.
Right.
And I should say feeling. I think a lot of us had the hope that it might be a game changer.
Sure.
Now, of course, as regulators, our job isn't to go out and innovate and create those new games or new ideas, but it's to regulate those things. So the task was understanding, first and foremost, what internet gaming was at the time, getting our hands around it and asking ourselves, is this something that you can even regulate like we do in Nevada and other states in America? Obviously, it had been popular overseas. We became familiar with the companies that were offering it at the time. We hadn't had the opportunity to vet those or license those, truly investigate those companies. So we were only aware of what we saw public facing in terms of what they offered and what they had. You're right. Mark Lipparelli was the chairman at the time of the advent of internet gaming. Going back to some of his predecessors, though, some of whom you've met, I think one of the first chairmen to actually encounter internet gaming was Dennis Nylander.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And if you recall, around circa 99, 2000, 2001, that time period, even then, Nevada knew that internet gaming could be a phenomenon.
Right.
And that was, if you recall, the time period where I believe it was Nylander and former Gaming Commission Chairman Pete Bernhardt authored a letter to the DOJ, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe
there was a letter that was sent by the two chairmen to the feds essentially saying, what is this? Is this legal or is it not? And I think at the time, the response came back in the negative. This is not necessarily something that is a green light from the feds, and so things slowed down. But at that time, I believe some of the enabling legislation was enacted by the state of Nevada.
Right.
Then when Mark Lipparelli was the chairman, the final push was done. Well, I shouldn't say the final push. The beginning of the push was started.
Right.
And Mark Liparelli, myself, and Sean Reed were the three people on the board at the time. And we worked together understanding it, trying to craft a series of regulations should it be legalized. And indeed, I want to say in the 13th session is what I would call the final push. I remember going into the Nevada legislature and presenting some of the bills on internet gaming and how it should be regulated. Mm-hmm. But the fellow who went before me was the governor, Brian Sandoval. And I remember he presented to the legislature their overall package, and then as he got up, I had to walk down and take his seat, and he turned to me and he said, "This is your coming out party."
And get ready, right?
I was thinking, oh gosh, you know, what have I got myself into here? But I think we all were collectively, as a group here at the board, comfortable with moving forward with this. Mark Liparelli did a tremendous job in terms of understanding the industry and its nuances so that we could be in a good position when we finally enacted the regs. After the 13th session, we did the statutory changes, and then we immediately worked on the regulatory changes, and then, as you know, we launched. My greatest fear, you asked about what my greatest fear was at the time, and it was twofold. One, that it would flop immediately, not get off the ground. You would have a green light launch, and things would shut down. And two, that some patron would be ripped off. Both of which would be embarrassing events for the state of Nevada. As you know, long-time Nevadan, we don't want anyone to be harmed when they play a game or a slot machine. That's why we regulate in the way we do, and we didn't want that to occur in the internet, new internet, burgeoning business at the time. Looking back, I remember the launch. I remember when everybody was going live. I remember the discussions going up to that, both with staff here at the board and the licensees. It went off well. There weren't any of those types of scandals or events or hitches where things just shut down and you had, say, a server crash. Things went up and they were off and running. What happened from there was probably some more of your future questions here, but we knew Nevada had a small population. And we knew that unless other states legalized and then partnered with Nevada, that it wouldn't necessarily become the be-all, end-all for gaming in Nevada. And we also knew that even if other states did legalize and we compacted with them, it may not be the be-all and end-all for Nevada. But it was part and parcel of what we're still doing today, which is enabling the gaming industry to do what it felt it needed to in a well-regulated environment.
So the technical things you were comfortable with when you first launched in terms of, you know your customer, the geolocation issues and things of that nature?
I had, I guess, kind of a unique position or standpoint in terms of that. Prior to becoming a member of the Gaming Control Board, I was the deputy chief of the Corporate Securities Division at the board. And the Corporate Securities Division regulates the publicly traded companies, investigates them, sort of a hybrid SEC, maybe DOJ type of division within the Gaming Control Board. I was actually one of the ones that had been able to go over to investigate 888. And also, I was one of the ones who had been researching internet gaming for then Chairman Nylander in the years previous. And also had the opportunity to meet with other gaming licensees, some that ended up applying for licenses and some that didn't, some operators here in Nevada that were getting comfortable in the business. So at that time, I had been able to actually see what these companies did. The company that had applied, and I could be wrong on this, so I stand to be corrected, but I think it was 888 that had first applied. And so that's the first company that we ended up investigating, and that's why I, as deputy chief, was involved in that, is we felt it was important and that there should be sort of a level of knowledge within the division if this did become big. So I had a chance to see what they did and learn about that company. And as then and as today, I'm still impressed with that company. They're out of Israel, as you know. They run a very tight ship. I was extremely impressed with the way they ran their business from top to bottom. We learned that internet gaming was more of a technological animal than a regular casino operation.
Sure. Right.
And it was so software-based that once we became familiar with the actual game and the play and the software, then we had to, and that was a very short time period, then we had to get comfortable with what they did in terms of what you mentioned, geolocation, age verification, patron ID types of due diligence, and that's when we did a real deep dive into what they're doing, and I'm sure that's what all of my colleagues across the country that are looking at it did or are doing now.
Sure, no question about it. So more than a year ago, Governor Sandoval signed a bill, a recent agreement with Delaware to share poker liquidity. What's happened with that agreement, and you know, is it working at all?
It's the multi-state internet gaming agreement. It's working well. Our colleagues in Delaware have been great to work with. It is something that is not on my list of problems day to day. Staff at the Gaming Control Board has meetings periodically with Delaware, and the numbers aren't big enough or the number of licensees aren't large enough to require much more than that at this point. But I think that it has been a success from our end, as I see it.
It made sense with 888 being the primary operator in both jurisdictions, so it was probably easy to put it together in that sense of the word. But what are some of the details in terms of how you share, you know, the tax revenues and things of that nature?
The tax revenues are, I think, a very basic concept. Nevada player, Nevada tax revenue. Delaware player, Delaware tax revenue. And that's why I go back to saying if other states legalize and we partnered with them, it's not like it would benefit Nevada to a great extent.
Sure.
If we partnered with New Jersey, that's probably how it would be. There were, I want to say at the time we entered into the multi-state internet gaming agreement, three up-and-running Nevada licensees. It ended up now that 888 is the sole benefactor of that, and that's kind of too bad because one of the things that we want in Nevada is as much competition amongst the industry as possible. It just didn't shake out that way for various reasons. We had at the time, I believe, the Fertitta Brothers Company, and then South Point was up. And the hope was that they could go over there and get those approvals in Delaware that they would need to do whatever they needed to do so that we could have all, a number of operators. The other thing that we really wanted to do was craft an agreement, and I assume you've seen it. It's only several pages. It could have been 60 pages. I'm a lawyer. The other people working on it are lawyers, and we tend to do that. You know, it would be a little too thick at that point. We all said, including the governor, this needs to be as simple as possible because it needs to be something that other states can enter into if they choose. So it's still there. It's still up and running. And I would hope at this point that if other states legalize, they may want to become part of it. But we'll see.
So I've spoken with Dave Rebuck in New Jersey, and he said, you know, he's had some talks with you guys about doing a similar thing. How come that has never panned out at this point?
Well, I, you know, since you talked to him, he probably gave you this answer, and I think their constitution, if I'm not mistaken, requires that the servers be located in that state.
That's true,
My memory is, and I haven't talked to Mr. Rebuck here probably in a year or so about that, maybe even longer, but I think that that was one of the sticking points.
They have to actually physically be in Atlantic City.
Server location, I think, was the, was one of the issues. And then I also think that licensee, and I can't, I won't presume to speak for New Jersey, but they have some licensees that, that we don't. And we have some licensees here that they may not, so there was that question as well. My position is that we're still open to talk with them and chat with them about that. I don't, you know, I said to them that I'm not sure that the server location is as big of a deal as everyone thinks, be it a big deal for them or a big deal for us. Initially, when internet gaming came in, we probably, along with New Jersey, were told this could be huge. You can have server farms in your state. There's going to be thousands of employees, and it's going to bring jobs to the state. I think it's kind of a red herring, to tell you the truth. I don't know if you've been to Switch. But there's not thousands of employees. It's a great infrastructure piece for Las Vegas. A wonderful company, and they do tremendous things, but it's not an employee intensive. There are a number of employees, but I don't think the internet companies would have been bringing thousands of employees to the state.
Right.
That was something that we learned when we went to Gibraltar, for example.
Right.
Mm-hmm. In that particular jurisdiction, the servers are located to be there, and the employees are located to work and live there, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
That's just not going to be the case in Nevada.
Sure.
I don't know if it's going to be the case in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. But when you move past that, to me, the server issue is somewhat irrelevant at this juncture.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think having New Jersey enter into the multi-state agreement would be awesome.
Sure.
I'd love to.
Yeah.
Start that up, and I'm sure Governor Sandoval would as well.
Yeah, no question. So there's been some talk that we want to expand from iPoker to online casino gaming. What's the procedure if that's going to happen?
In Nevada?
Yeah.
Going from iPoker only to all games?
Right.
I believe, and I would have to go back and look at the statutes, I don't know that there's a statutory change that would be required for that. I think what would be required is a change in the regulation, which would be Regulation 5A. Mm-hmm. If I'm not mistaken, there's a part in there that discusses the fact that right now we're poker only.
Right.
Regulation changes take a couple months, so I think that to play that out, I think you would have to see a petition from the industry come to the commission to change that particular regulation.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had any discussions with any gaming companies about that, so I think that's how it would have to work.
Okay.
You could petition the Gaming Commission to change the reg.
Mm-hmm.
Gaming Commission, first it goes to the board. Board okays that it's a bona fide, righteous reg change.
Mm-hmm.
We take it up as a project to work on, and then the process is usually, and it can vary depending on what it is, but typically, Roger, it would be board workshops, board vote to move on to the commission, and then the commission can have workshops as well if they choose, or they can just put it on their agenda for a vote.
So it doesn't have to go before the legislature again?
No.
Okay. You know, we've seen in New Jersey there's pretty solid evidence that iGaming, full casino gaming, actually, you know, increases the traffic to the land-based casinos. Would you expect to see that in Nevada as well?
Yeah, I would think so. I've always been one who said that it was, I don't think necessarily true that it would detract from land-based gaming.
Right.
I've always felt from our research and from chatting with operators here and online companies when we were doing this, that it would be something that could be used to enhance it.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't surprise me to hear that.
And that seems to
have worked. I'd be interested to see some of that data, because that's important data.
Sure, absolutely. So let's move on to the sports betting issue, which is somewhat related because we have so many, you know, apps where you can bet sports on your phone here in Nevada, and I've got four or five of them myself.
Do you?
And, what was the process of that coming about? I think that was a little before your time, right? When that actually became legal?
Well, I think yes, it was a work in progress at the time,
right,
a bit before my time, but moving forward to my time and beyond, it is part of what we've been collectively trying to do here within the state, and I would say collectively meaning regulator, legislature, executive branch, and industry, and that is just to be able to offer patrons what they want.
Sure.
Companies are always, I think, in a bit of flux and trying to determine what that is, and part of that requires trial and error, and we've seen some trial and error in the apps.
Sure.
I think that particular part of the business only stands to grow, along with what we've been trying to do with sports betting.
Right. Well, sports betting, you know, the revenue have grown, over the past 5 or 6 years pretty substantially, I guess mainly because now you can do in-running betting as well as the mobile betting. You don't have to actually go to the sports book. What kind of role will Nevada play if and when sports betting is legalized on a national basis?
That's a really good question. And I don't have an answer.
Yeah.
I just don't. Because I think it depends on what a federal law does.
Mm-hmm.
If PASPA is just repealed without any further guidance from Congress, that's one thing. If there is a law that's passed in its place regarding sports betting and the state's ability to do that, I would imagine it would look a lot like the other gaming laws that are promulgated by Congress, which would be to ban it, but say that if a state wishes to do it,
right.
it can enter into that activity as long as it's legal within the state.
Sure.
I think that's what we see with the WIRE Act, with the UEGA, things of that nature. So if that were to occur, I would imagine other states would ask us questions as to how we regulate sports betting.
Sure.
Of course, as you know, you've got far greater experience than I do. Our licensees will be in those states.
Right.
So that part will be taken care of. I don't necessarily think if sports betting was opened up and Florida says we're going to allow sports betting, they're going to get some new unique company that no one has heard of. It's going to be the Nevada licensees exporting their knowledge and expertise into that, which I think is incredibly important with sports betting because it is so nuanced and so highly specialized that I've told people this that I've been talking to over the last several months that both sides can lose pretty quickly if they don't know what they're doing with sports betting. And I mean industry and regulator. And back to the beginning of our conversation, I'm thankful that we have staff here at the Gaming Control Board, especially our enforcement division, that are very specialized in terms of sports betting.
Right.
Because it is so nuanced.
It is. It's very, very nuanced. And I was just over in London in February for the ICE trade show, and I'd say at least a quarter of the floor were sports betting information aggregators, you know. So you know, especially as you get into this in-running betting, I mean, it just gets very, very complicated, the numbers and the algorithms and things of that nature. How do you guys keep track of that?
Well, being able to balance your books, we know, is the first and foremost rule for a sportsbook operator. And we don't require them to do that, importantly, nor do we dictate what a hold is for a sportsbook in Nevada. What we do is communicate. And the lines of communication are open with the sportsbook constantly and our enforcement staff in terms of sharing information, looking at lines. And importantly, not to deviate too far from your question, but importantly with sports betting, making sure bad people are not engaged in it. You may have seen in the 15 session, we passed a law that would enable us to go after associates of illegal books. That didn't exist. And so prior to 15, we had people from offshore illegal books here in Las Vegas. And we've been trying to weed them out to get rid of them. It is a different animal, I think, than regular land-based casino gaming.
Great question.
Looking to acquire valuable players for your online casino or even your land-based property? Check out iGamingPlayer.com, the leading affiliate marketing site for legal online gaming in the U.S. iGamingPlayer is one of the first and only online affiliate marketing sites licensed in New Jersey. iGamingPlayer delivers quality customers and profitable players with its mix of online gaming news, play for free games, and information on the best promotions offered by its partner online casinos, poker rooms, and land-based casinos. iGamingPlayer uses the vast knowledge about players and their behaviors to deliver players to your online casino and act as the bridge to your bricks and mortar property. So visit iGamingPlayer.com to see what you've been missing.
Let's talk about skill games. I know you've worked very closely with the AGM group, defining what skill games are and how they can be regulated. How did that work out? We've just seen it introduced here in the last few months with the Gambling Company, and GameCo, I think, is next in line here. But how has that worked out?
You mean the history of it to present, or
in terms of how you worked with them, you know, what were some of the concerns that you had and the manufacturers had at the same time?
It started in the, I want to say, the interim between the 2013 and 15 legislative sessions. There was a body created, I want to say, in 2014 called the Interim Committee to Study the Impact of Technology on Gaming, something along those lines. I was part of that, along with Chairman Pete Bernhardt of the Commission. I believe we were ex officio members, and that committee's duty was to study what's next and try to determine what Nevada should do. About that time, I recall AGM presented to the committee, and that would be what I would call the skeleton of what became SB9 later in the 15 session. When the 2015 legislative session rolled around, and I should go back to the interim committee, the result of that obviously was Nevada needs to push, Nevada needs to continue to be at the forefront. What does that mean? For me as a regulator, it meant that we regulate to the statutes. We regulate to the policy mandate from the Nevada legislature. So let's loosen that up if that's what needs to be done, because my staff here every day are working with Chapter 463 of the Nevada Revised Statutes. We play within that field, and we're not going to go outside of that. So let's take a look at what that is. Mm-hmm. And when you drill down into skill, hybrid, chance gaming, slot machine gaming, gaming devices, it's a statutory analysis. Mm-hmm. The very beginning of Chapter 463 contains a ton of definitions, and we go by those definitions. Mm-hmm. Those definitions are very important. And AGM realized that as well, and I think their attorneys were smart because that's what they changed, essentially. Everything after that, the Gaming Control Board and Gaming Commission regulates. So if you change the definitions of what a slot machine or gaming device is, mm-hmm. whatever that is what we will regulate. They, AGM, I remember it very vividly, sent me a draft of the proposed BDR for that. Mm-hmm. I remember looking at it several times, thinking it was a good idea. And AGM's always been very good to work with. The NRA's been very good to work with. But I remember I was here in Las Vegas, and I was flying home to Reno. It was a night flight, and I went over that BDR another time, and I thought, you know, let's just go a step further here. And even though it's kind of funny, some people may laugh at it, because we've already kind of had skill gaming in Nevada.
Well,
I mean, some
video
gaming skill. So I knew that we were playing with not just definitions, but concepts, and concepts lead to thoughts, and thoughts lead to what we can do here as regulators and the industry can do. What AGM had initially crafted was, okay, here's a gaming device, here is a skill-based device, and I thought, let's fill the gap. Let's widen the playing field a little, and what could be something that incorporates elements of both, something that does a little this or a little that at the behest of the manufacturer and, importantly, the operator, who's going to have some say in what they want. So I called it a hybrid game, and chatted with my technology division staff, and they thought, that's fine, that's a good idea, let's see where that goes, and called AGM the next day and said, what about this, you guys, what do you think? And Marcus Prater, Dan Reeser, Tom Gingoli were great, three good guys, and they took some time, a day or two, and came back and said, we like it. And so that's what ended up being SB9, is this concept of the gaming device, the traditional slot machine gaming device, and then there's these other two animals, which are a hybrid or chance type of, or skill type of device. If you look at our regs, I believe in Reg 14 now, we've also incorporated those definitions. And a chance device relies 100% on chance, an RNG that is always whizzing in the background, you know, you get what you get based on chance. And then open up the playing field to these other types of things. The session went well, and the legislature received it well. The governor was a fan of it. He's always been very, very energetic in terms of making sure Nevada's at the forefront. And once that was passed and signed, we started this process of regulation project after regulation project after regulation project. Not just with that, but with other elements, because, again, the statutory scheme had changed for us to free us up as a state to get a little more creative. And I know that's a long-winded answer, so I apologize. Here we are, and I think the last 2 years have seen a record number of reg changes in Nevada.
Yeah, no question. Now, when you altered the description of this hybrid machine, did you do anything in terms of like the minimum payback percentage and things of that nature?
No, because I'm only a lawyer and I'm not a mathematician. I'm not very smart. That's why I went to law school. But I figured the smart people would take that and run with it. The mandate that I gave my staff was this. Right now in Nevada, there's an end zone. There's a line. And we as regulators are going to always do what we do. And that's per the statute. The very first statute says gaming has to be regulated strictly. It has to be competitive. And these are the things that we have to do to protect the state and the industry and the state's populace and all the 40 million visitors that come here every year to Las Vegas. I said, but let's move that line. Let's move the goalpost. Once we do, it's going to be up to the industry to fill that in and fill that space, and we will see if they can do that or not.
Right.
That'll be up to them.
Right.
But we'll still continue doing what we do, making sure that we can audit these things, that we can account for them in terms of tax revenue, and that we can regulate them, that the people, as always, who are offering them are suitable, that they're regulated while they're offering the games, and that if something goes wrong, we can punish the wrongdoers.
Right.
When I look at, going back to me being a lawyer, that was one of the main reasons I wanted to change the definition section in the statute, and perhaps AGM's reasoning as well.
Right.
Because lawyers look to the definitions, and somewhere there is a company counsel who has a product that's flopped in front of them by someone saying, can I put this in Nevada? And that person's going to have to pick up the statutes to see if it's a possibility.
Sure.
So there was a message there, I think, that we all wanted to send.
Okay. You've done a couple of other recent unique things with betting on different events. Let's start with the esports. You've permitted certain sports books to allow betting on these esports tournaments. What had to happen for you to be comfortable to do that?
Same thing with internet. We had to learn what esports is and understand it and determine as regulators whether it's something we're comfortable regulating, that it can be regulated, and that, well, first and foremost, that it should be regulated.
Right.
And we're not regulating esports. We may at a certain juncture if it becomes popular, but what we determined is, should we allow our sports books to take bets on these events, which then takes you into an analysis of how's the event run, who's offering the event, what does the event consist of, both in terms of how it's played and how its results are determined, how it's judged.
Right.
Is it really a righteous activity that is fair and that is conducted appropriately? And, you know, what's the product being played? How does that work? Can anyone tamper with it? Can there be a scandal or an issue? And that's just to get over the hump and allowing wagers on it.
Right.
So we did that, and it was a very interesting 6 months or so for me.
Right.
I think I'm kind of inquisitive by nature, so it was fascinating.
Yeah.
Really to really research what this was, and it's actually kind of funny too, because I'm not a video game player.
Right. I neither.
Don't I just don't know the first thing of it. But we have staff here that are younger, and they do, and it was very helpful to sit down with a lot of those folks to say, what is World of Warcraft? You know? I mean, what is Call of Duty? What is a skin, and why do you care what a skin is? And so it was kind of cool. The governor enacted the policy committee right at the perfect time for that, because as we were recognizing that esports was something we would have to contend with in one way or another, and we were just spending our own personal time understanding it, the governor came out with the Gaming Policy Committee, and right then I knew it was a perfect time to throw that on the committee's plate.
Right, okay. And another thing you just did just last week was allow wagering on the NFL draft, and not on individual players or teams, but but on certain events. Again, you know, what made you comfortable that that could be a success? Which it seems to have been.
Oh, by the way, can I go back to one thing that you mentioned
on
esports? You mentioned that, I think you mentioned that a handful of licensees could take wagers on it. When we do another event, we post it on our website.
Right.
So even though one licensee has asked for the ability to bet on it, all licensees
can
get to. So they can all do it. We wouldn't do a selective
thing. The same thing with the NFL draft.
Same thing with NFL draft. We got a request, and staff here at the Gaming Control Board took a look at it. If you look at Regulation 22, there is a section that gives us guidance on how to approach that, and there's a little laundry list. Forgive me, I don't have it in front of me, but there's six or seven things that we look at as an agency and that I look at as the board chairman to get comfortable that this is something that is appropriate as an other event.
Right.
We've in the past done Reno Air Races.
Sure.
We've done Heisman Trophy. We've done Cy Young Award types of other events, and this, I think, compares to those.
Right.
It's something that no one person knows ahead of time. We didn't think that there could be some kind of cheating incident or something inappropriate that occurs. The result can be determined accurately. It's verified. It's easy to see. And importantly, the licensees wanted to do it. And we allowed it, and luckily there weren't any issues.
Yeah, it seems to have really worked out very well. But under those guidelines, you probably couldn't do like the Oscars, right? Because they name them ahead of time.
Not after last year.
Especially after last year, right?
Not after last one. But that's an example of something where I don't know that we would get to that level of comfort. I'm not an expert in the Oscars, but I would imagine people know the outcome before the crowd does.
Sure.
And that's just kind of
That can't work. But on the other hand, you know, there's a lot of betting activity in Europe on elections and things like that. I mean, nobody knows really what's going to happen there. Could you see us doing that at some point?
I get asked that every legislative session, and I believe that is something that would require an outright reg change. What I've heard, though, each legislative session is it's something that the legislature hasn't really been interested in saying, go and do that.
Right.
Whether that's something that occurs in the future, I just can't say.
Okay. So let's talk about some of the compliance issues, the AML and the KYC and things of that nature. That's so important in the industry these days, particularly with the requirements not just that you set, but the federal government and the state government sets. How do you oversee that kind of activity?
We used to oversee it to a greater extent than we do now.
Yeah.
Do you remember Reg 6A?
Sure.
Those were the regulations that essentially we turned over, going back to past chairman Dennis Nylander, I think was at the helm at that time, and we turned that over to the feds. And I think former chairman Nylander was relieved because it required a lot of man hours and it was a lot of overhead for the Gaming Control Board. Now, today, as I sit here, we work with the IRS, we work with FinCEN, we work with the gaming licensees to ensure that they're compliant. As you know, it's been a long road for the gaming licensees across the country in terms of FinCEN and what FinCEN is looking for in terms of CTRs and what is a suspicious activity report versus what is not. When do I file a SARC? When do I not? 2 years ago, if we would have had this conversation, I would have said that everybody's trying to feel and get a good feel for how to comply. To a T, every gaming licensee in Nevada wants to comply, and they've expended huge amounts of dollars and man hours in determining how you comply. We've met with FinCEN. They're great to work with, and we continue the dialogue as to what should our casinos be doing, and if any are doing anything wrong, let us know so that we can all work on that. Now that we're sitting here 2 years later, I think the casinos, and you'd have to interview them, but I would imagine they would tell you they've gotten their arms around it. And that's my hope, is that they continue to comply.
Well, we got a good recommendation in the latest FinCEN report, I believe, saying that casinos were doing as much or more than they needed to do. So that's probably partially because of your policies here in Nevada, since so many casinos are here. So congratulations on that. So you mentioned working with AGM, you know, to streamline the regulations for all these various things. And, you know, Nevada's always had that reputation to try to cut the red tape. How closely do you work with the operators as well as the manufacturers to make sure that you're not throwing, you know, ridiculous things up in their way there?
We chat with the operators pretty regularly. However, I think that the conversation with the operators is more involved between the operator and manufacturer at this point. The conversations with the operators was initially, What do you think needs to occur?
Right.
What do you think needs to happen here? Some of the most startling conversations I had with operators were, say, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, when they told me, this is the size of our casino floor. It used to have slots in this percentage, 90%. Now it's 75%. And then for me and for them, I think the question is, well, what do you fill that with? One of the answers was nightclubs, I think. The answers change, as does gaming. I think every year gaming changes. But for me as a regulator, my first question is, is that our fault? Mm-hmm. Is that something that's the fault of the regulator? Or what needs to happen for that to change? Mm-hmm. Do you want it to change?
Right.
Should it change? If the answer is yes, it should change, and yes, it's the regulators, then let's have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I started speaking with the operators at length on that.
Yeah.
But more importantly came the conversations with the CEOs of the manufacturers as to if there is that desire, if there is that need, and you are the one that's meant to fill that gap, what is it about our regs and our statutes that you feel needs to change, if anything? And realize that we're not going to budge on patron protection. We're not going to budge on the things that go to Nevada's reputation mm-hmm. in terms of if I am from Florida or North Dakota or New York and I'm going to spend a week here, I can rest assured that this game is something that's not going to rip me off.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to cheat me. Assume that those things are always going to be in place. But what else out there in the universe of regs and statutes and tech standards do you think needs to change? And it was really actually kind of interesting because what we did, Roger, is we began during the process of changing the regulations a series of discussions with manufacturing companies through AGEM. We hosted a series of private roundtable discussions with the AGEM membership.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone was free to come.
Right.
When I say private, I just mean it was board and industry.
Right. Mm-hmm.
There was no press.
Right.
But what I found there, and I brought staff. I brought Jim Barbie, the chief of our technology mm-hmm. division, and some of his folks, and then the gaming deputy that was going to be responsible for drafting the regs,
mm-hmm.
and myself. And it was really interesting because what I found was, with that dialogue alone, maybe a lot of this stuff didn't need to be changed. And what I say, what I mean by that is this. A manufacturer would say, yes, but we can't do that. And Jim would say, why can't you? Well, because we heard this, or we think that is how this is written. And Jim would say, no, it's not.
Yeah.
That's not true. No, you can do that right now.
Right.
Why haven't you done that? And I saw light bulbs going off.
Right, yeah.
And those dialogues alone, I think, went 1,000 miles.
Yeah.
You should ask AGEM what they think.
I have. I've talked to Marcus and Tom Giroli about it, and they were very thrilled that those things went so smoothly and that there was so many opportunities to interact with you guys.
But aside from that, there were and are still things that needed to be changed. And the dialogue was, why do you want to change this? Our answer would be, is this something that goes to those core values as regulators or not? And if not, why do we have it?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Another thing that really helped was having our accounting division present as well.
Sure.
Because increasingly now as we go, Roger, we're finding that technology touches various areas,
mm-hmm.
not just the technology division
right.
of the Gaming Control Board, but now the technology division chief, Jim Barbie, who's doing a great job, in my opinion, and the audit division chief, by the name of Kelly Colvin, who mm-hmm. is also doing a great job.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're partners because
right.
Kelly has to have input as to the accountability of that
sure.
That particular software or technological innovation, whatever it is. Just having that dialogue
right.
went a long way.
That is so important in so many jurisdictions that don't have that. So, I just have a couple more questions. During your tenure, you've had to get tough with some companies and some individuals that may have misunderstood, you know, your goals or your resolve or something like that. And I don't want to go into the individual cases because that'll get me into trouble. But what's your message for companies that are coming into Nevada, that want to get involved with gaming here, and how do they have to approach it?
Well, the first way to approach it is to simply give us a call
mm-hmm.
and arrange for a meeting to discuss what they want to do. Do they want to build a casino resort? Do they want to create or put into the market a newfangled gaming device?
Mm-hmm.
That, going back to discussions and conversations, go a long way. That goes a long way because we can sit and talk to them about, here's what you need to do, here's how you need to do it, take a look at their corporate structure. Here's what will work and here's won't. Here's who would have to be licensed and found suitable and who won't. Because we've also made a lot of changes in terms of that.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody in a private company has to be licensed anymore.
Sure. Right.
Further, public companies can now change over to a private investment company. Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily need to have a Form 10 and be registered on the stock exchange anymore. They can come in and act and be licensed and regulated just as a public company would without actually being traded on the New York Stock Exchange. Mm-hmm. Our staff is the best at telling them what they would need to do, and they can walk away and decide after that whether they want to file an application or not. I have those meetings every week.
Sure.
And they're very, very beneficial. Mm-hmm. The message I guess I would send personally is that you'll be treated fairly. Mm-hmm. We don't play favorites.
Right.
Maybe it's because I'm a lawyer, but I view myself not only as having to go by the law, but also do it in a fair way. So if you're a billionaire, you're going to be treated the same as a millionaire or a person who makes, $33,000 a year. Mm-hmm. I'm going to treat you the same.
Yeah.
We're going to have the same open and honest discussion. Mm-hmm. If you do great things, good on you. Go mm-hmm. for it. God bless. If you get in trouble, you'll be treated the same way. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you asked me that, actually. I had a conversation with a company actually last week that we did what's called an OSC in mm-hmm. order to show cause. It's a private letter to a company saying, we think you've made a mistake. Mm-hmm. Tell us why we should not file a complaint. Give us your explanation as to what happened, mm-hmm. why it happened, and how you fixed it. Whether we go to a complaint or not is a different story, but they felt that they were being picked on. Mm-hmm. And I had to clear the air and say, this has nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with you being picked on or not. In fact, I like our licensees. I like our gaming operators. Mm-hmm. I hate it when a problem occurs and I have to have that conversation with them. But we're going to be treating everybody the same mm-hmm. at the end of the day.
Right.
And I think that's how my fellow board members feel as well.
Okay.
And I'm very lucky to have them. Sean Reed and Terry Johnson, I think the same mm-hmm. way.
Great. Well, that just leads into my last question. I've been a student of the Nevada regulatory system for my whole career.
Okay.
Very good friends with Bob Fess, you know, probably one of the fathers of gaming regulation in this state. And, you know, you guys, you know, have a reputation of being the gold standard in the industry, that this is the way gaming regulation should be run. And I know many states and jurisdictions have come to you to say, how do you do it? So how do you approach that? Do you really take it as a huge piece of responsibility that you have to maintain this gold standard during your term here?
I hear the term gold standard. I kind of laugh when I hear it. Others can say what they want about that. But yes, I do view myself as having a huge responsibility, mm-hmm. Not only in running an agency with 400 people throughout the entire state, a budget of $90 million, mm-hmm. That what we do at the end of the day affects the entire state of Nevada. It's no small task. Mm-hmm. It's a big ship to steer. I think and I hope that we've gotten it to a point where it steers a little bit more nimbly, mm-hmm. a little bit quicker, but it's always going down the right path.
Right.
I enjoy meeting with other states that want to regulate, and I would never presuppose that they need our help. Mm-hmm. If they want our help, we're there. And we will give them our experience. I don't think we would tell people how mm-hmm. to regulate, but if they want to have a good, open, honest dialogue on our 60 years of experience mm-hmm. or so, 70 years of experience, we're here. We'll tell them the stories. We'll tell them the ins and outs and the ups and downs and all the details, be it law enforcement with our police officers, mm-hmm. Be it accountants, be it attorneys, technology people. We're here to help and try to build that relationship. Because that's what counts at the end of the day.
Sure.
Gaming is everywhere. Mm-hmm. When they're up and running, we would hope to be in a position to have a great relationship with them. Because as I said earlier in our discussion, chances are it's our licensees that are over there.
Yeah.
And we're very familiar with those licensees. Let's share information. And assuming that their statutory model, their ethical model, their mm-hmm. cultural model, holds those same things true that we do, ethics, integrity, honesty, gaming licensees that mm-hmm. do the right thing, regulators that do the right thing, then we're all on the same page.
Great. Well, AG, thanks for the time. It was great to sit down with you. We should do this more often because there's always issues coming out here that we'd like to like to hear what you have to say about.
There's always something. It's good talking to you. Thanks.
If you enjoyed this edition of the GGB podcast sponsored by iGamingPlayer.com, the leading affiliate marketing partner for online and land-based casinos. If you want to hear more about the topics discussed today, visit GGBMagazine.com for all the news and trends in the casino industry. For weekly updates, subscribe to GGB News, which delivers all the news of the gaming industry to your desktop, waiting for you every Monday morning. Please join us next week for another edition of the GGB podcast. And don't forget to follow GGB on Twitter at Global Gaming Biz, on Facebook and LinkedIn at Global Gaming Business Magazine. Have a great week.